Hey everyone, Eric here. I am the host of the Unseen Paranormal Podcast. Join me for a new episode every Wednesday as I delve into the unseen world with historians, authors, researchers, and investigators as we try to understand and make sense of the paranormal. You can listen to past and future episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or at unseenparanormalpodcast.com. Please like the show on Facebook and share with your friends. And remember, some of the scariest things are unseen.
Welcome back to Southern Ghost Stories, where we take you on a ghost tour to some of the most haunted places in the South. I'm your host, Chelsea, along with Alan.
Hey there.
We hope you checked out our last podcast on the Iroquois Park in Louisville. Today, we're going back to Salem, Massachusetts to talk about a very old historic home called the Gardner Pingree House. Alan, can you tell us about the building?
In the mid-18th century, John Gardner Sr. purchased a lot on Essex Street. He would eventually sell it to his son, John Gardner Jr., a few years later. In 1804, Gardner built an opulent three-story Federal-style mansion that was the fourth largest home in Salem at the time. However, a few years later, after falling on hard times, Gardner sold the house to his brother-in-law, Nathaniel West. In 1814, Captain Joseph White bought the house at 128 Essex Street.
After the American Revolution, the port in Salem rivaled Boston's port and was one of the largest in the country at the time. Men like Captain White, who owned ships and knew how to navigate the sea and move goods from one port to another, were compensated very well for their services. Another way to make money back then was by selling and moving enslaved men and women. Although slavery was abolished in 1738 in Massachusetts, mariners with a foggy moral compass were tempted by the money that could be made in the slave trade. Unfortunately, Captain White was one of those men. In fact, his pastor openly rebuked him, but it did little to dissuade White from using the ships to move enslaved men and women from the Caribbean to ports in New England.
Captain White was a widow who had no children. He lived in the mansion with his niece, Mary Beckford, who served as his housekeeper. Mary's daughter, Mary White Beckford, also lived in the home, and it was believed that Captain White was quite fond of her. Benjamin White, a distant relative, also lived on the property and served as a handyman along with a servant named Lydia Kimball. Captain White also had a nephew, Stephen White, who also lived nearby. Stephen was a member of the upper house of the Massachusetts legislature and was a prominent citizen in Salem at the time. With that being said, at 82 years of age, Captain White's family was basically waiting for him to die so they could collect their inheritance. One of the men who ran one of White's ships was Captain Joseph Knapp Jr. Knapp fell in love with White's great niece, Mary White Beckford, and this didn't sit too well with the old grumpy captain.
Captain White thought that Joseph was only interested in Mary because he thought she would receive a portion of his vast estate when he passed away. But the two were in love and got engaged. This is when Captain White put his foot down. He told Joseph that if he married his niece, he would not only fire him, he would also cut Mary out of his will. Despite the threat, Joseph and Mary were in love and got married anyway.
On the morning of April 7, 1830, Benjamin White, Captain White's handyman, awoke to find a cool breeze flowing through the back part of the house. As Benjamin went to investigate, he noticed the cool air was coming into the home because someone had placed a plank in the window sill to keep it open. Knowing that Captain White kept an iron chest in his bedroom with gold in it, Benjamin thought someone had broken into the house that night. He and Lydia Kimball quickly raced up the winding staircase to check and see if Captain White was all right.
What they found would not only shock them, but it also only created a ripple through Salem that would weave its way into the fabric of American literature and pop culture. As Benjamin and Lydia looked through the doorway into Captain White's bedroom, they found the elderly man lying in a blood-soaked bed. His head had been beaten with a blunt object, and he had 11 stab wounds in his chest. But stranger yet, the iron chest containing all of his gold was untouched. Salem was buzzing. One of the richest men in town had been murdered in his sleep. But no treasure was taken. A committee of vigilance was formed several days later, which gave 27 men the authority to interrogate citizens and investigate the murder. Captain White's nephew, Stephen White, funded the group, and they met nightly in his home to discuss their findings.
The committee of vigilance and law enforcement were stumped. They had no clue how to solve the case until an inmate came forward with some information. The man wanted to make a deal to get his sentence reduced, so he told the police what he knew. A local man named Richard Crowninshield murdered Captain White.
The Crowninshields were a prominent family in Salem, but Richard was somewhat of a black sheep and never really lived up to others in the family that had achieved success. Around this time, a friend of Crowninshield started sending letters to Joseph Knapp, who had married Captain White's great-niece. He also sent letters to Joseph Knapp's brother, John. The letters asked for money to be sent to a post office in Maine and threatened to reveal information about the brothers to the police. When the Knapp brothers' father saw the letter, he went to law enforcement about the extortion attempt. The Committee of Vigilance sent a check to the post office, and when a man named John C.R. Palmer tried to retrieve it, he was arrested. Palmer was arrested and charged as a possible accessory to the murder, unless he cooperated with authorities. Facing a lengthy sentence, Palmer spilled the beans and told officials everything. The Knapp brothers had offered $1,000 to Richard Crowninshield if he would murder Captain White. Crowninshield was arrested, and the Knapp brothers were also thrown into jail. Crowninshield was indicted for murder as principal, and the Knapps were charged as accessories.
After talking with his attorney, Crowninshield found out that there was a loophole in the law. If the principal was not tried, the accessories could not be convicted. So, in order to help Joe and John Knapp, Crowninshield hanged himself in his prison cell. Crowninshield's death made things hard for Attorney General Perez Morton and Solicitor General Daniel Davis. They even brought in Special Prosecutor Daniel Webster. Webster was a gifted orator who was best known as a lawyer and congressman from Boston. It took two trials, but both Knapp brothers were found guilty and sentenced to death. Joseph and John were hanged together on the same scaffold.
Before he was hanged, Joseph Knapp confessed to paying Crowninshield to sneak into his uncle's bedroom and steal what he thought was his will. Without a will, all the captain's money would be divided amongst all his heirs, which included Joseph by marriage. But unbeknownst to them, Captain White's will was in his lawyer's office, and it mandated that most of his fortune go to Stephen White, his nephew. After White's murder, his estate sold the house, and it was sold to a local politician and future mayor of Salem, David Pingree. The property remained in the Pingree family for over 100 years until it was donated to the Essex Institute in 1934.
The entire fiasco left a scar on Salem and also impacted people in town as well as the world. After the trials, Daniel Webster gave a series of speeches that were written down and saved. The speeches found their way into the hands of a young writer named Edgar Allan Poe. Webster's speech inspired Poe to write the short story, The Telltale Heart. Captain White's murder also inspired another young writer who lived in Salem at the time, Nathaniel Hawthorne. As a young man, Hawthorne was riveted by the murder and the drama that followed when the Knapps went to trial. It's believed that the characters and themes from The House of the Seven Gables and The Scarlet Letter were taken from the captain's murder.
In the 1880s, businessman George and Charles Parker, who grew up in Salem, bought the rights to an English game called Cluedo. The Parker brothers were inspired by Captain White's murder, and they decided to rename the game Clue and model the storyboard after the Gardner Pingree house. So if you guess Captain White was murdered in the bedroom with a club and a knife, you win! Due to the grisly murder of Captain White, many believe the Gardner Pingree house is haunted. Over the years, volunteers at the museum have claimed to hear footsteps and other strange noises inside the home when tours are not taking place. Objects in the home have also been known to move around and turn up in different places from time to time. The house is normally open for tours, but due to the pandemic, you may want to check with the Peabody Essex Museum before planning a trip to Salem.
We hope you enjoyed our episode on the Gardner Pingree House. If you'd like to take your own ghost tour of Salem, check out our Salem Ghost Map app. Also, check out our website, southernghoststories.com, where you can find old podcasts and the books that we've written. Feel free to leave a comment or send us a message on our Facebook or Instagram accounts. We'd love to hear about any experiences you may have had, and feel free to give us some ideas on new locations you'd like to hear about on future shows.
And those books Chelsea mentioned are Southern Ghost Stories Historical Hauntings, Haunted Hotels, Ghost of Gallatin, and Murfreesboro, Spirits of Stones River. Be sure to subscribe and leave a 5-star review. Those reviews are quite helpful, and we appreciate everyone who's taken a few minutes to do it for us. Please check back with us next time as we head back down south to Louisiana to talk about the Superdome in New Orleans.
How do you say it?
Say what?
Caribbean or Caribbean?
Either.
I do both, too. That's so neat. I love the game Clue. I'm actually very good at it.